Welcome to Transition, Gadgets 360's gaming and pop culture podcast. This is episode number 76 of Transition, and as a tribute to that, we are going to be talking about this game called Fallout 76. Now, there are so many things in this to discuss, like the always online component of this game, which has led to a lot of confusion because Bethesda wasn't entirely clear during their E3 press event, where they mentioned that you can play single player, but you need to be online. But do you need PS Plus? Do you need Xbox Live? To answer all of these questions and what's there in this game, we have our games editor, that's Rishi Alwani.
Good morning, night, evening, and yeah, since the nuclear holocaust, that's E3, is finally settled, we have everything you need to know about Fallout 76.
Yep, and friend of the podcast, Mikhail Madnani, is also here to nuke Rishi.
Yeah, Vault-Tec assisted podcasting system, let's go.
Cool. So, I think the first component of this game that we should address is the always online thing.
Okay, so before getting into the always online thing, this is a full Fallout game. It's a full priced release, I should say. As with a lot of Bethesda published games, usually when they don't do a numbered entry, it ends up being something like a $30 or $40 release, which is about half or a little more than half compared to a full price thing. Like with Wolfenstein the New Order, ended up with Wolfenstein the Old Blood, which was not as... It was basically an expansion standalone thing. Prey got Mooncrash, which is, you still need the game, but it is DLC. And Wolfenstein's getting a separate VR release, which is $20 for PSVR and PCVR. And there's also this thing called Wolfenstein Youngblood, which is again not full price. Fallout 76 is a full priced game, and it's also a Bethesda Game Studios game, which is their first game since Fallout 4 now.
Yeah, so what essentially has happened is, it's funny you bring out Fallout 4. Because Fallout 76, according to studio head Todd Howard, is actually the basis for Fallout 76. Fallout 4's multiplayer, whatever they want to do for Fallout 4 in terms of multiplayer, ended up becoming Fallout 76, which is why it's not exactly a numbered entry, and they can't call it Fallout 4.5 either. So they've decided to go with Fallout 76. Now, the reason why 76 is because if you look at the game's lore, there's a vault known as Vault 76, which is known as the Control Vault. Now, Vault-Tec, which is the company behind putting all the vaults in the Fallout world, wherein, you know, people rushed in to survive during the nuclear war. 76 was the Control Vault, wherein those who were put there to rebuild. It was one of the first vaults that also opened after the nuclear war. So they were brought in to rebuild and, you know, repopulate the land. So what's interesting in Fallout 76 is, one, yes, it's always online. And the reason for this is the game is cooperative and multiplayer. And in addition to it, there isn't any strict PvP element. I mean, most of the game's focus isn't about you killing other humans, but you and other humans ganging up against the game world, which is super, super hostile. The game takes place in West Virginia, as you could tell from the trailers and the music that keeps going on, which has reached borderline annoying at this point in time.
Yeah, I'm tired of country roads already.
How can you be tired of country roads? Like, want to buy the game just because of country roads?
No, it's annoying. It is the most annoying thing.
I saw that Miyazaki movie, Whisper of the Heart, and that's when I grew tired of country roads.
Oh, so you mean from the same person who gave us Dark Souls?
That's wrong. Never mind. Anyway, so point is... it takes place in West Virginia, and what they did is they tried modeling the game around the area's natural topography. So you have it's a lot more colorful in terms of being a Fallout game. It's a lot more varied. You have different enemy types, like something called a Scorcher Beast, which looks like something out of Monster Hunter. And then you have other enemies like the Mothman, which is basically a flying creature that was seen in the trailers. So there's a ton of variety. And what's interesting is, even though the game is a precursor to the last, to every other Fallout game, be it Fallout 1, 2, 3, 4, or even New Vegas, there still will be super mutants in the game, which is very amusing because Fallout 1 actually dealt with the super mutants and how they came to be through a sinister character known as the Master. So... all of that's going to it's going to be in the game. They're going to find a way to make it work with the lore. There's going to be a strong focus on co-op play. That being said, you can also play the game with friends. I mean, sorry, you can also play the game by yourself in solo, but you'll still need to be online.
Yeah, so I'll just skip forward through a few topics and address that right away. I think you will need a PlayStation Plus subscription or an Xbox Live subscription to play Fallout 76, even in single player mode.
So yeah, because the game is always online and it is a paid game, you will need PlayStation Plus. Now, Xbox Gold is required in general for all online games, even free to play online games. In fact, like Fortnite, you need Xbox Gold to play it on Xbox, but on PlayStation, you don't need PS Plus. Like Final Fantasy XIV Realm Reborn, which is the MMO, you don't need PS Plus to play that because it has its own servers. At least that was the logic at that time. But yeah, you will need PS Plus and Xbox Gold. And on PC, obviously, you don't need to play online. But where it will be available on PC, we'll get to in a bit.
Yeah, so I mean,
so it's basically not like there are, as of now, there are three editions. There's like a standard edition, which is $60 or the equivalent, which will ideally be $399 in India at retail. Then there's a tricentennial edition, which is the equivalent to a deluxe edition, which is usually $20-$30 more, which as of now has not been listed for India, but it likely will show up here. After you buy both of these, you still will need a paid online subscription to play. And if you are super generous enough or you're super rich enough to pick up the armor edition or the power armor edition, that's a $200 edition abroad. Obviously, you still will need to pay to play online and to play the game in general for that also.
Yeah, and on the topic of editions, the Tricentennial Edition is basically base game plus access to the beta, which the standard edition of the game also has access to the beta, and also comes with a bunch of cosmetic items you can use in-game. And the Power Armor Edition, as the name suggests, has a fully working Power Armor helmet, which with a voice modulator, and it also has a duffel bag along with it.
And a steelbook.
Yep, and a steelbook.
But yeah, like that edition, if it does show up in India, expect minimum 18,000 to 19,000 rupees for it, because it's pretty big. And yeah, $200 versus when the Pip-Boy edition was what, 150 or 120?
Yeah.
That ended up being about 14,000 over here, approximately. Yep. So if it does show up, it's unlikely it will. But if it does show up, expect at least 18,000 or 19,000 for it, which honestly is not worth it.
Yeah. So and now actually coming back to the total cost in terms of playing the game, the cheapest we're seeing the game right now available in India is 4,000 rupees. And that obviously doesn't include the cost required for PS Plus or Xbox Live. So safe to say you're going to be looking at paying at least $5,500 to play the game if you go for a 3-month PS Plus subscription.
And if you don't have it already.
Yeah, and if you don't have it,
then obviously it's whatever. But on as of now, the PC price is $3,499 at retail, but there's no Steam page for it. There's no mention of Steam anywhere right now. And given it's an online game from Bethesda, it may show up on Steam later or it might not show up at all. But right now you can pre-order it on Bethesda.net. using their launcher, which is what they use for a lot of games right now. It is up for pre-order in multiple editions on PC, but it's looking unlikely it'll release on Steam at this stage. It'll be smart of them to do it with this, because as we've seen, Activision is pulling out of Steam for their online titles. Like both Destiny 2 and Black Ops 4 are not on Steam. They're exclusive to Battle.net. While they are putting the single-player games like Sekiro, Shadows, Die Twice, which is the From Software game they are publishing, and Crash Bandicoot Insane Trilogy on Steam, because those are single-player experiences. So, I wouldn't be surprised to see if Bethesda slowly pulls out, because this is the best game to try it out with. It's the safest one, I'd say, also. It's a Fallout game, and it's an online game which people want to play, so they'll do it. And if it does end up being successful, and if they actually do pull out of Steam, then expect Elder Scrolls 6 to also ditch Steam when it shows up within the next 5 years or whatever.
Yeah, that's something that's interesting to note, because a lot of Bethesda's recent success has been on Steam.
Yeah.
Be it Fallout 4, be it Skyrim and its multiple editions, be it the modding community, be it all of it has emerged from Steam and Steam alone for a large part. That being said, you can't blame them for wanting to exit Steam. Because unlike other publishers, Bethesda actually has a long gestation period between games. They actually build all their tech from ground up before making the games. I mean, a game like Elder Scrolls Oblivion had a 4-year development cycle. And once that game was ready, they were looking at ways to leverage it beyond a single game. And that's when they were fortunate enough to, get their hands on a Fallout license and make a bunch of games on that. So point is, they're actually one of the few companies that actually invests heavily in tech. Yeah, sure, it's a running joke that their games are super buggy. And I mean, that also is a factor of the fact that, a lot of the games are super complex versus others. So from a business standpoint, I won't be surprised if they look at it from a point of view that, hey, with Steam, we only get 70%. Let's get the full 100%. put it back into making a better game. Because, and we've seen them do this over the years of putting it back and making a better game. One of the best examples has to be a game from Bethesda Game Studios' sister studio. I think it's called ZeniMax Online, which made The Elder Scrolls Online. At launch, it was pretty horrible, to say the least. But then, you know, over the years, they fixed a lot of things. They made it super accessible. There's something called the One Tamriel update that allowed you to access any realm regardless of your level, so you're never capped out. They added a lot of new areas that people liked, like Morrowind, Somerset, and they actually gave it, it actually became its own game, its own thing, and it's now a game that, you know, a lot of people come back and play it on a regular basis. So I think they're looking at a similar model for Fallout as well, with Fallout 76, wherein, hey, it's a shared world. You don't have that much of a player count versus a fully fledged MMO like Elder Scrolls Online. But at the end of the day, this is something they want to sustain. So when you're looking at creating a game with a large focus on live services, when you're looking at creating a game with a large focus on events, on paid content, on ensuring that the player experience is great, you'd rather do it on your own platform than having to, you know, pay Gabe Newell 30% all the time. So to me, that just seems to be the logic as to why they'd probably want to ditch Steam. That and the fact that, I don't know, there's perhaps an issue with Steam's own curation and policies right now, which could eventually indemnify the brands themselves. I mean, today when Steam decided to go out and say that they will not curate anything, that they don't have a code of ethics and they will just not allow things that are illegal, rather than taking a broader stance on curation, which is what the Nintendo eShop, Xbox, Microsoft Xbox Store, and the PS Store do, it then also looks badly on the brands that are there. So the way I see it, there are a lot of reasons for them to skip Steam on this one and probably do it rather than with the Bethesda launcher.
Yeah, I mean, all of those are fair enough. I mean, if you're making an online game, you better like try your best to control all elements that starts with how you like fire up the game. And yeah, I mean, if it's just like the way I see it, this game is more of a service than like a game where you just, you know, pay and then you get a great experience. This is going to be an ongoing investment. What they have not announced so far is that what happens in like year two or year three of the game when like first year, you know, you get that content update or whatever. And after that second and third years, do you still have to continue paying for this? Because I'm guessing that they would be leaving money on the table if they didn't add something like that.
Well, so here's the funny thing, right? The game takes place in one region, which is West Virginia. And they've said it's four times the size of the map of Fallout 4. And Fallout 4's map is pretty expansive by all accounts, even by 2018 standards. The way I see it, the most logical thing for them to do next would be to add new areas in year two. Maybe areas adjoining West Virginia, add them into the game. And then maybe eventually, gradually over time, follow a strategy quite similar to what Elder Scrolls Online's become today, where you have a ton of areas across the game world from various spots. So who knows? They could probably add the capital from Fallout 4, from Fallout 3. They could add 10 Penny Towers from Fallout 3. They could add New Vegas from, you know, Fallout New Vegas, since it's their IP. They could add Boston from Fallout 4. They can even add areas from the West Coast, from Fallout 1 and 2. Point is that they have a ton of options in year two. But here's the thing, unlike other publishers like Ubisoft, wherein at Ubisoft's E3 2018 showcase, when they showed off the Division 2, they actually talked year one content. They actually talked the fact that this is their roadmap. And that's because if you think about it, Ubisoft has that much experience where they can confidently say this is our year one roadmap. And that's what they did with the Division 2. With the Division 1, that wasn't the case. They waited till post-launch on Division 1 before talking about year one content. So I think it also has to do with the experience involved with the studio. And I mean, Bethesda Game Studios, most of their output has been single-player content. So I think we're going to have to wait a while to see what's there. And as Mike said prior to the podcast, they had more content in that one trailer than Sea of Thieves had at launch in its totality. So I'm not too worried on what we're going to get.
And also, I have a feeling that given how they've seen the success of Elder Scrolls Online and how it's evolved, they also like wanted to try something with Fallout, because like Fallout and Elder Scrolls is basically what most people know Bethesda for at this stage. So like them saying that, you know, we want to support this and like make it like fresh for people for years to come kind of shows their commitment. And I don't see them ditching this, because it's kind of not a side project either. It's an actual Bethesda Game Studios title. Now, while at E3 they did surprisingly say that they are working on Starfield and Elder Scrolls 6 for whatever current or next gen or whatever, even though retailers have already started taking pre-orders for Elder Scrolls 6, which makes me laugh. But then, like, at this stage, you could probably say Elder Scrolls 6 ships with Beyond Good and Evil 2 and Cyberpunk 2077 for Wii U, because everything's vaporware at this stage. But
actually, from all the vaporware, I think that we're probably going to see Elder Scrolls before Cyberpunk, but that's just me.
So, I don't see this like them not talking about content coming forward. They have a lot of time leading up to release. Like, it's releasing in November, which is after the month of hell, October, which is when, like, everyone's scared of Red Dead except for some other games which are, like, probably not going to sell too well.
Fist of the North Star, Lost Paradise.
Yeah, yeah, more like lost sales. But I'm not too worried about post-launch content for this. What I want to know is to see more gameplay, to, like, have more factual information. Like, how many people can be in a server at one time? What if more people want to join friends when the server is already full? Stuff like that. You know, like, the stuff which people are used to in other games.
I think we're probably going to see more gameplay at Gamescom. Usually, what we at least if I go by what happened with Fallout 4, we saw a teaser for Fallout 4 a couple of weeks before E3. At E3, we saw cinematic and some bit of gameplay, and we saw extended gameplay at Gamescom. So I won't be surprised if they follow the same approach for Fallout 76. And also keep in mind that the other thing, which will be a point of interest for many, will be the fact that will certain gameplay elements come back, and that's something at least they've been honest about. So for one, if you much like some of us on this podcast are crappy at aiming, VATS is back. It takes a more real time approach to it. What VATS is basically in past Fallout games, VATS would pause the game. You hit the VATS button and it would pause the game, allowing you to select which body part of the enemy you want to hit for maximum damage. So that's coming back here, except it isn't going to pause time. It's going to take place in real time. So how that works out is something which would be fun to see. In addition to that, there's going to be no NPCs. Every person you see in the game is a real person, which kind of reminds me of the whole Skyrim meme of every mountain can be climbed. So apparently, yeah, so the focus is on not having NPCs at all. Though I won't be surprised if that changes midway through the game, as in if they push out an update to add NPCs. Reason being is that the quests in this game don't happen like in other games. In other games, you actually have an NPC, non-playable character, telling you where to go, what to do. Here, apparently, it'll be delivered by robots, or there'll be something on a board or something like that. So there are a bunch of things which they've talked about post E3, which I think would be interesting to see how they play out IRL, how they play out in the game world, and that'll be interesting to see how that goes down. But then what's also of note is the fact that the end game includes you nuking people, which is something they talked about at length.
Yeah, wherein, and they also did mention that since this is like a post-apocalyptic game, there will be dozens of people in the world, which is something that Mike mentioned earlier. Like,
yeah, dozens of people on each server. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, so because obviously they need to look at how their infrastructure and how the engine and their online stuff can handle these things, and how many instances of the same world. They did mention that, like, you obviously crafting plays a huge part over here. Like, if you kill a certain enemy, you get lead, you can craft bullets and all. To actually craft and to set up your workshop, that'll be the position of your workshop in that instance of the world will follow you wherever you are. But if someone else has something set up over there, they'll just give you a blueprint you can set up instantly. And also they've been, like, at least they're talking to some extent about how they handle these things. But yeah, dozens, I probably think it's going to be maximum 24 or 36. They wouldn't say dozens if it was close to 50. They'd be like almost 50 people.
Yeah, and
that's how I view it.
In addition to it, so the endgame essentially includes you and probably friends or unlikely allies cobbling together nuclear codes, which you can then use to launch a nuke strike on an area. And they even talked about how grieving would be negated. Now, grieving is one of the worst things that happened to online gaming, wherein you have players who basically have nothing better to do in life but show up to make life uncomfortable for other players and basically kill them, grab their loot, rinse, repeat. So in this game, there's a system in play wherein grievers are given a notoriety rank, and there's incentive for the rest of the game world, for everyone else in the game world, to go out and kill them. Doing so gets you a bunch of other stuff and gives you newfound status. So they're working on ways to ensure that the game is a pleasant experience, I'd say. Because keep in mind, the Fallout titles tend to attract a wider audience, as much if not more so than the Skyrim, than the Elder Scrolls games. So it'll be interesting to see how these things play out. And I guess it's not something we're going to get a good idea of in a gameplay demo. It's something we'll probably have to wait at launch to see how it pans out.
Yeah, but trolls and those who want to make life hell for other people, they are going to find ways. Whether the system is there in place or not. But, you know, at least they are taking an effort before the game is even like out there and, you know, in people's hands to play. That's good.
But like, and I have more faith in them handling this than Bandai Namco, because like Dark Souls Remastered on PC was promised to be a hacker-free experience, and like day one there was someone who was dropping like 1 million souls in your game, getting you soft banned and stuff like that. It like, I feel bad for people who like basically bought a patch, as they say, like for them they still think it's a patch, even though like it's an actual, it's worth playing on PC now. But yeah, the online is still full of hackers on PC, which is very disappointing. So
yeah, and I mean, Bethesda have gone on to say that here's the interesting thing, right? Prior to it being revealed and announced and having gameplay shown off at E3, there were a ton of leaks doing the rounds that the game would be similar to Rust. Rust is a hardcore survival game, very brutal, very tough. You lose your loot, start from the beginning. Here, Bethesda's positioning this as a softcore survival game, whatever that means. But I don't know how softcore that would be, considering, well, you can nuke people in the end game, so I don't know how softcore that's going to be. But they're trying to make sure that people a lot of pressure seems to be on them to ensure that people understand what they're getting into, which is pretty much unlike another shared world game called Destiny and its sequel Destiny 2, wherein, you know, Bungie basically misrepresented the game. Wherein the demo was, the opening demo was just basically, the entire game was just a rinse and repeat of that. But Destiny 2 had similar issues, wherein the end game content wasn't even, you know, properly thought out. The story didn't even make much sense. That there were microtransactions galore. And here at least they've been straight up saying that, yeah, you know what, they're going to be cosmetic microtransactions, which will then go towards, buying them will go towards in the upkeep of the game and stuff. So they've been honest on what you're getting. And I think a lot of it also has to do with the fact that there is some amount of negativity seeping in to online, to always online experiences. We've seen it with Sea of Thieves as well, where the beta was basically the full game. And we all know how that ended up. So hopefully, you know, there's more to it compared to the others. Maybe they'll just go and do what Bungie and Rare were supposed to and actually make a good job of a shared online experience.
Yeah, so the nuking thing looked interesting when they described it, obviously. But when I thought about it, like, what do you get after nuking an entire area? You get, like, rare loot and you get, like, different items which are, like, hard to find in the game, including some, I guess, some sort of weapons. And, like, I think there was even some mention of some, like, skin-related items which you get. So why do you have to nuke a place to get all these things?
So that you can clear it from all the, you know, enemies. But the thing is, getting the nuke codes isn't going to be easy. You'll be squaring off against large enemies like Scorcher Beasts and Super Mutants to get them. It's not like, hey, it's not like you start the game with a free nuke code.
Essentially, this is like the Destiny 2 raid thing Fallout.
And you'll have to team up with people for it. So it's essentially end game content.
Yeah, but you know what? Like, this kind of a thing is something we've seen like for years now. It's just that only now it's sort of gaining prominence. So if you guys played that game, there was one Diablo game, I don't remember which one, where like there was an online component and like the bosses you faced in the game, they were like some overpowered version of those bosses, like
Diablo 2, Mephisto, and Baal, and all these people.
And they were like almost impossible to kill, but you know, like you had to team up with like 50 different people who were like at a super high level, and you got to go there and kill them.
Yeah, so I think I do see the commonalities, but then more than that, it seems to remind me about World of Warcraft does in terms of its raid content too. So how it comes up and how it actually, how many people end up accessing it will be amusing to see. I wouldn't be surprised if year two sees them pushing out something similar to One Tamriel, wherein, hey, you can go anywhere and do what you need to do. But I mean, yeah, seems promising nonetheless.
Yeah, so now I think there are two small points which we need to talk about before we wrap up this episode.
Yes.
So one of them is like, quest and how the quest system works in this game, and the second is seamless drop in and out.
Yeah, so Mike, take it away.
So like, while they said you can play it single player, obviously the draw of this is to like play with your friends online and just, you know, just like boot in, join a party, online chat, relax and try and survive. So at least in the making of Fallout 76 documentary that Noclip has on YouTube, Todd Howard said that they, and like even the other people in the studio said that they want this to be drop in drop out, where you can just like, you know, join your friend just after like one loading screen, you'll be in your friend's game together, y'all can play and all that. That's kind of how it should be, because and also like, yeah, you will keep your progress because you'll be in the same instance together and you'll be doing your own thing, unlike Far Cry 5 and State of Decay 2, where when you join your friend's game, only your friend gets all the progress and you don't earn that much.
Yep.
Or you don't earn enough to warrant your time invested. So that's going to be fun. But again, like we need more clarity on how this is going to handle squads and stuff like that, because like, you know, teaming up will give you an advantage over other people in the same world, stuff like that. So like, we need more information at this stage for that bit, and about the quests.
Yeah, so in terms of quests, because there are no NPCs, they've talked about how they're trying to engineer a way for people to find the quests and progress through the game. Because the idea is that when you start up the game for the first time, you realize you woke up late to the opening of Vault 76 and that everyone's out in the game world. So it's a pretty much a deserted vault. So you and if it's going to be anything like past Fallout games, like past Skyrim games, past Elder Scrolls games, I keep confusing the two for some reason. What's going to happen is you're going to probably
be taking an arrow to the knee.
No, you're going to be learning the ropes within the vault. Okay. Understand finer elements like combat, maybe understand how the item system works, how inventory works, what goes into equipping stuff, and once you're done with that, you're probably let loose in the game world. And I guess what's going to happen is you probably get the first inklings of what you're supposed to do within the vault itself. There's probably going to be some instructions there for you to follow, and probably chain it together in that fashion, where you end up meeting robots or looking at notice boards, or I don't know, maybe getting quests from other humans. But I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how that works out, because it's not something they actually showed off in gameplay. Maybe it's something we're going to see at Gamescom, hopefully. But how we actually get to take on quests over the game length would be interesting to see, because there's no way you're just going to get new codes handed to you or just as randomized drops from enemies. There's going to be a method and process to it. So how that works out will be fun to see.
Yeah, and also like the notoriety system, which is that whatever grieving thing,
yeah,
you mentioned earlier, like that got me wondering. So if, for example, you lay some kind of a booby trap in one place for a monster and it ends up killing some other person, does that also count as like grieving or like...
Exactly, yeah. You don't know. Yeah. Which is why it's going to be interesting to see what they decide to show off prior to launch.
Mm.
Games out in November, we're ready at the time of recording this podcast, ready in June. July, August, September, October. And within the next 4 months, it'll be fun to see what Bethesda actually shows off with regards to the game.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I can totally see players just for fun, like to troll people, like find out where the vault's like exit is or the entrance is,
yeah,
how you want to see it, and put like some sort of landmine over there. And when people walk out, first thing that happens to them is they just, you know, blast open.
Yeah, so apparently there are provisions in place to prevent that. But what's also interesting, and I think to me this is where the actual, and I hate the term, innovation is how they've revamped the skill system. So in past games, you had a perk chart where you could, you know, choose what abilities you want to max out. Here, there are perk cards. So if I want my team to, if I want my squad to roll with where someone has maxed out charisma, have another person who to roll at maxed out cooking skills, I can actually allocate points and roles accordingly, which is really cool. And I think that gives a certain amount of flexibility, because then you can re-roll those points. And then if you're going into another battle, like let's say a massive Scorcher Beast, have two people focused on tanking, have a third person focused on buffing up the other guys, and have a fourth person go full out attack. So to me, the way the skills and perks and abilities seem to work this time around seem a lot more flexible. And I think it would be fun to see, and I think the incentive is there to actually go ahead and play with people. How many people take that up, though, will be interesting to see.
Yeah, and also, like, the base building element of this game is something else that I'm really interested in, because I believe they mentioned that you can build your own buildings like, you know, you do in Fortnite, and with your own underground layers and all
that.
Yeah,
so what's interesting is that the base building tech we saw in Fallout 4 makes a comeback. It's a lot more expanded. So it's not like this is a brand new element. They're expanding on what they did with Fallout 4. And I mean, honestly, it'll be great when it comes to building settlements, when it comes to shacking up.
And you can transfer
team.
Them easily. That was the highlight feature of this, right? So yeah, that also like an interesting element. Like my whole vision for this game was that like how you could do in Fallout New Vegas, which is go through the game without shooting anybody. You know, you like there's no way to do it in an online game where, you know, your whole like game depends on like picking up loot and codes from people and all that. There should be some way to sort of like when you build a base and all, you can, instead of like having players attack your base, there should be some way to sort of allow them to have a dialogue or sort of join your party or something easily.
Yeah.
Instead of, you know, everyone who appears on the horizon is a threat and you have to shoot them.
Yeah. And also, we also don't know how factions, if they play into this at all. Like Fallout 3 had the Enclave and Brotherhood of Steel. Fallout New Vegas had, you know, the Legion and a bunch of others. Fallout 4 had the Institute, Minutemen, and you know, a few other options. So we don't know how factions will play into this. Or who knows, it might just be end up being a side objective like Destiny 1 did, where the faction, where aligning with a certain faction gave you specific perks. So yeah, there's still a lot of unknowns where that's concerned.
But yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to the beta actually to see like they have an extensive beta planned later this year. So I really want to see how these things are like how they work out actually in action. So like we'll just find out once that happens and all the bugs, you know, that we expect with any Bethesda Game Studios game. I mean, God only knows how many times I glitched out in that. Second vault in Fallout 3 where the mutants attack you.
Yep.
Like, I really don't want to see something like that again. Anyway, but, so...
Before we round it off though, one thing is that the pricing in India is a bit of an unknown before the Xbox One. So it's like...
this is digitally though. Yeah, at digitally. Retail, it's $399 for standard and we know about Tricentennial yet.
Yeah, so India gets the standard edition, that's a guarantee. The Tricentennial edition should make it, but no pricing guarantee or availability just yet. What's interesting on the Xbox One is the digital version of the game is 5,600 rupees, which is $80, while the Tricentennial edition is 7,300 rupees, which works out to, I think, $110. Now, what's interesting here is that the pricing is completely out of whack, and it's not in line with standard Bethesda pricing for India. At the time of recording this podcast, we've got in touch with Bethesda to ask them, what's up, what's happening? Is this an error? Did your pen slip while putting the numbers up? So hopefully you should have information on that sooner rather than later. But as it stands, if you're looking for to buy the game, a physical copy of the game, it's available for pre-order as a standard edition on PS4 and PC right now. Xbox One version unknown when it's going to go out.
Anyway, so the games we've been playing this week. So I haven't been playing any console games because, you know, I was catching up on sleep after E3. But what I did play was Exploding Kittens on iOS once again. So the game is like a ton of fun to play actually. But this time what I did was like I found a couple of friends and got them to buy the game. And then what you can do is sort of like have two or three of your friends in a game and invite like random strangers from the internet to join it. So in a game of five people, three of us were playing together and we were cheating, like we were helping each other out and sort of making the game difficult. And like the funny thing was other people seemed to catch on to that and they kept disconnecting. Ultimately, it ended up, you know, being just the three of us playing with each other. But yeah, a lot of fun and I still highly recommend that you check it out. And, you know, if you have an iPhone and all, like there's family sharing option always. So you can just share it with up to like six people after buying it once for 160 rupees. So completely worth it and still enjoying it a lot. And hopefully next week I'll be playing some, you know, console games. So yeah, until then, Mike it is.
So been playing Killer Instinct Definitive Edition, which is it's a reboot of a fighting game franchise which Rare created on the SNES, which was only on Nintendo platforms until the Xbox One launch. Definitive Edition like has everything, three seasons of characters, a lot of extra skins and stuff like that. A lot of fun, like hadn't played it since the original Combo Breaker release on Xbox One. Like kick-ass music, really, really good, interesting combos. And like after spending 5 minutes in the training section, it's already better than Tekken 7. So yeah, like that's been really good. And other than that, a bit of like Splatoon 2's Octo expansion on Switch, which is a lot better than the like pretty bad single player which the base game had. Like interesting levels, very good music, nice aesthetic and stuff like that. Played 5 levels so far only.
A communication error has occurred.
single player. So I'm safe. So yeah, basically that.
Yeah, Rishi.
So I've been playing Prey, the Mooncrash DLC, which is so good. Like, I mean, it actually expands on the game lore in a lot of cool ways.
That trailer was really nice, you know, that roguelike element to the trailer, yeah, where you keep trying again to escape. Yep.
So it's pretty good. I think I've unlocked all 5 operators. It's a lot of fun. Been playing that. Been going back to the Prey base game because I finally got New Game Plus with some other additional options in terms of gameplay. That also is pretty good. Still holds up quite well. So basically been playing a lot of that. Been going back to Fallout 4 just to see to get myself reacquainted with what to expect when Fallout 76 hits. But yeah, so basically that's what I've been playing.
Yeah, I'm not even sure if like Fallout 4 is a good game to go back to, you know, like look at in terms of story. Yeah,
I actually like the story, so yeah, I regret nothing.
Okay, cool then. So time to wrap up this episode on that rather upsetting note. So that's all for this episode of Transition, and we will see you with another episode next week. As always, don't forget to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Instagram at Gadgets360. If you have any questions, comments, or feedback, do write to us at podcast@gadgets360.com. The music for this episode comes via Magnus Solai Paulson, whose album PPP PPP is where the tracks are from. And if you like this show, don't forget to subscribe to us on the Apple Podcasts app on your iPhone or the Google app on your Android phone. Just search for Transition Podcast Gadgets 360 and you'll find us. Thank you so much for listening.